Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Soul Purpose Healing. We are jamming to an old favorite from The Voice. The Voice is Whitney Houston. She still lives in us because we have her music. And today we're going to explore a part of this voice that many people have not considered, especially when it comes to her transition, her time that she had to leave this earth, that the voice, the live voice, had to leave the earth. My name is Beata, and also known as Ana, my spirit seed name. And thank you for tuning in to Soul Purpose Healing. If you, for any reason, would like to call in and comment or join our conversation, the number is 215-383-5863. And Rafa, my host, and I will be here for at least 90 minutes. We may go over if this show goes where no one thinks it will go, because this is a very, very, very important subject. We're talking about what really killed Whitney Houston, but more than that, we're talking about the unconscious loyalties or allegiances that every woman has, that every man has. And we don't think about them. In fact, most people that I meet are very unaware of the unconscious influences in their life that are keeping them from living a whole, vibrant, healthy life. And so we're looking at Whitney Houston today because, as the host of this show, I came across this book last week, and when I read the excerpts on Amazon, I was just flabbergasted at the depth that the authors went to reveal this really profound truth as to what really killed her. And the authors of this book are Judith Shervin and Jim Snikowski. They're two psychologists. And what they talk about in this book is so revelationary and so healing for everyone if we believe what they're saying is true. Some of us may not believe what these two authors have written, but I witnessed to it, I resonated to it so much, because in the holistic health field that I've been in for the past more than 20 years now, this is so profoundly true about unconscious loyalties and allegiances. One of my favorite scientists, Dr. Bruce Lipton, is a master at explaining this unconscious reality. If you ever have a chance to read his books, they will show you in a scientific way why this is true. And so today we're going to just explore the voice that so many of us came to know, so many of us came to love, and yet we did not truly understand her emotions and her relationships and the things that are keeping her in our minds today, even to learn this lesson. I believe strongly that every person who has a platform like Whitney Houston had was sent here as a messenger to teach us a lesson. And this is one of the lessons that we have missed, I believe, because we can all really grow if we take hold of this lesson and really think about our own lives and how we are similar. Because as she was singing, I'm every woman, she really is every woman, because we're all experiencing a journey to succeed, a journey to be healthy, and a journey to understand ourselves and our creator. We're going to get into that today with my host, Rafa. So let me just welcome my brother and my co-host, Rafa, back to the show. Welcome, Rafa.
Yes, Sister Viana. Thank you for having me again. Glad to be here with you.
My pleasure. So have you thought about this topic? We'll let you, Rafa, give a little introduction, because when you hear Whitney singing I'm Every Woman, I know it brings back memories, but how does it relate to you and your memories of Whitney Houston?
Oh, wow. Just remembering that song, when she came out with that song, I believe it was around 89, 90, and that was, she was coming into her own at that time.
Mm-hmm.
She had already been established, you know, she wasn't trying to fit in and trying to be that girl, that image, you know, that was created for her when she first came out. Many barriers had been broken down by then. The music landscape was changing and so on. So that was a very expressive, self-expressive song for her. She was pregnant at the time when she did the video, and she was happy. You could see she was just so happy. She was in her skin. It was, I would imagine, one of the happier times of her life. And she had a lot of people, you know, TLC and Chaka Khan, of course, and other artists of that day were in the video with her having fun. It was just a fun video, very happy time for her in her life. So it brings back good memories for me. When I hear that song, thinking about her, life scarred with such pain and what people think they want, that success.
Now listening to that beautiful voice that we just heard.
Yeah.
I mean, was that not a beautiful voice? Like you said, she was at the top of her game at that point. She
That's
was
right.
a star.
That's right.
And yet, listen to what the authors of this book quoted that Whitney was saying at the age of 30. They quote, yet her ongoing insecurity was evident in her self-deflating statement made to Anthony DeCurtis of Rolling Stone magazine in 1993 when she was 30 years old and a huge megastar. She said, I quote, I sound like my mother when my mother was my age, though I truly think my mother has a greater voice than me because she's the master. I'm the student. She has a greater range, greater power than I ever did. So they write, they summarize that in the book saying, Whitney's words reveal her inability to own her own genius. I'd like to say own her own gift. And when placed in the context of her overall relationship with her mother, a much deeper picture emerges. Now, some people never even heard of her mother, but those of us who followed Whitney and who, especially in the African-American community, we were familiar with the gospel singing of her mother, Sissy,
right.
Because as we know, Whitney came from a Baptist church background. She grew up in the church, and she was in the Pentecostal background. And so Sissy Houston was hardly known by anyone, but her daughter idolized her in a way. And it was a relationship that in one way revealed her attachment or her loyalty to her past. You even mentioned, Rafa, when we were talking, that the place where Whitney grew up, Newark, right?
Yes.
Newark, New Jersey, that was an adventure in itself. Growing up in the projects back in, 1963, she was born. And an African American, the only daughter of her mother and father, she had brothers, of course, in one of the oldest Black Baptist churches in the country and one of the roughest parts of Newark. And you were telling me, Rafa, that you have even some memories of what that neighborhood was like, right?
Yes. I spent some time, I have some very close friends that are in Jersey, and I lived in Jersey for a little while. My ex-wife is from Newark, so I'm very familiar with the neighborhood and the surrounding town. Worked out there for a while. So Newark is a very rich city as far as what we would call, African-American heritage. It's a neighborhood similar to a lot of the big cities in the north, New York, the way I'm at, Chicago, Detroit, and so on, where you had a very poor class and you had a middle class that was, living comfortable, not rich, but, people who had their own homes and had vehicles and whatnot. Whitney grew up in that type of environment, so she was not that wholesome and squeaky clean girl that the industry put out back in 1984 when she first came on the scene. And it, not to say that she was a street person, she was not. She grew up, like you said, in a church, and she had a family structure, but she grew up in the area where she would see things and she knows people. She's familiar with this street life. So for her, it was an internal battle, I'm sure, with being that image that she had to live in the public eye. Being thrust in the world scene at such a young age, about 18, 19, but dealing with who she really was growing up in that area. Like I was telling you yesterday, there was a part of Newark that burnt down in 68 in the riots after Martin Luther mm-hmm. King got killed. And I hadn't ever gone to Newark until maybe 94 and 95. I really was going around a lot, and by the later 90s I had moved over there for a moment. So there was a area excuse me, in Springfield Avenue, that you could see that the buildings that had got burnt out in 68, 30 years later, were still there. 28, 30 years later, those buildings were still standing, burnt out. And a couple of miles away is the business district. You're looking down a hill and you see downtown Newark, Broad and Market. It was amazing. I couldn't believe, like, why don't they fix this up?
Yeah, so she didn't grow up in a golden palace, for sure.
No,
and so
I
want to bring out, though, the difference, before we get more into her life and her story and the conflicts she had, what's the difference between the two levels of major consciousness? That's what so many people are not even aware of, this topic. So we want to help break it down so that you really understand and relate to the every woman of Whitney Houston. Because we're all in her. And there are basically two major levels of your mind that determine your life, the conscious dimension and the unconscious dimension. And the conscious dimension, as the authors of this book so beautifully should reveal, is your everyday mind that you use to decide everything from what to eat for breakfast, what you'll wear to work, who you'll invite to lunch, most of the other day-to-day decisions of your life. It's like, you're thinking about these things. What are you going to do? It's kind of like just making decisions every day. That's basically your conscious dimension. On the other hand, the unconscious dimension is filled with primitive fears and attractions, do's and don'ts, beliefs and prohibitions that were learned or programmed into you from the time you were even in your mother's womb. It's the programming that says who you believe you are, beginning as early as your 9 months in the womb, the messages, the feelings, your reactions, especially in those early years, both in the womb and in your early family environment that you're born into. All the values and emotions that you grew up absorbing, that's the underlying stuff that creates what we're calling in the show unconscious loyalties or allegiances. So that is what the gist of Whitney's story is for us, is looking into all of the allegiances that she had, starting with her mother. She idolized her mother. And there's a part in the book that describes in Whitney's bedroom, and this is what really was fascinating to me, a photo in the Rolling Stone magazine, March 15, 2012, shows Whitney's teenage bedroom. Think about this. This is her unconscious dimension here. Whitney sprawled out on her bed with a very large frame poster-sized photo of her mother on the wall above her. The photo portrays Sissy as a tough, dark-eyed, emotionally bleak, and forbidding cigarette-smoking woman. Most teenage girls don't even have their mother's photo in their bedroom, let alone poster-sized. So also, it's not even the kind of warm, smiling photo of a mother that you might expect, especially since Whitney referred to her mother as one of the most important persons in her life. And so one of her most basic programmings in her unconscious was the photo of her mother day and night, presenting with her with a powerful psychological presence in Whitney's young life. So we don't know exactly why she, what is it, Whitney idolized her mother, but we do know that that image is what greeted her every time she went into her bedroom, and it's what looked down on her even while Whitney was sleeping. And she says also in the book, in an interview with Steve North of Daily Beast, Whitney felt coming from her mother, "Mommy, I'm going to be a star. I'm going to take care of you, and you're never going to have to work again." So Whitney spiraled downward in many ways because she was succeeding at playing out the dark images and loyalties of her unconscious attachment to her past, and what the authors call a love grip, the power of unconscious loyalty, staying loyal to your values, your beliefs, and even your emotional atmosphere, of your early beginnings. One of my unconscious programmings or loyalties was with my own mother. My mother was an alcoholic most of my young life, and as I grew up, I've had a very controlling nature. Because as a child, the emotions behind living with a parent who's an alcoholic, or even a parent who's abusive to the other spouse, the emotions behind that are fear. And so fear is dominating your life. You're doing things mostly out of fear instead of faith. You're doing things because you don't want to feel that pain again that you felt as a child. And so I have had to adjust my, quote, religious upbringing, my in my home, and but domestic, sad dysfunction. I've had to adjust that in my adult life to come out of fear of having that sadness and having something happen to your loved one, so you have to try and control them. Now, that's just been my journey in one area of unconscious loyalty. When you wake up to by reading books and talking to people and having relationships with other people, that's where you become aware of your unconscious loyalties. As a friend, I want to be able to tell Rafa that, Rafa, are you doing that, or ask Rafa as my friend, are you doing that out of fear? Or are you doing it out of love? And if your friend or your relative comes at you with, oh, that's none of your business, and don't talk to me, and it's none of your business, then you're not in the relationship that's going to bring healing to that other person. And so, as I have learned, is you just back away. You can't control them. You can try and develop a conversation, but so many people are afraid to go there. You know what I'm saying, Rafa? They're afraid to go into that unconscious reality that is really driving them and causing them either to be sick or unprofitable or just in a state of frozen state in their career. It's like you have to be ready to change and shift, which is when you're in a place like Whitney Houston was in, that's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have so many other things pulling at you. Things,
yes,
and people and pressure. It's you know, hard enough for us to live a properly functional life as opposed to a dysfunctional life when we're not in the public eye. So imagine when your name is a how you're your name is a household word.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much harder. That's a lot of pressure. And some people relish the limelight, and some kind of, they're more reserved. I personally couldn't handle that kind of intrusion into my life. Whitney was seemingly a kind of private individual also, as she had that element to her. So I could imagine she was a Leo like myself, and we can be in the spotlight if we're doing what we love and we're going with our heart and we believe in what we're doing, but just generally we kind of are shy in areas of our life, so that must have been very hard for her. And
well, you know, she did go into the public eye in a kind of a bad way, because she, in 2004, she, in an attempt to help her, I guess, her then-husband, Bobby Brown, she was trying to help him succeed by being in a very short-lived reality show called Being Bobby Brown. And she even exposed a lot of her increasingly emotional, disturbed world to the whole television audience. And in the book, they suggest that this comes from her background. Again, in her family where her mother lost her wealth through its loyalty to bailing out close relatives who were in legal trouble. And so Whitney lost her wealth, they quote often like $240 million at the top to only about 20 at her death. And they believe that due to her inability to focus on what she needed in order to thrive with this gift, it was a gift. Instead, she constantly gave away her money to others while surrendering to her own self-destructive addictions because of this loyalty again. And it's interesting that there were so many prohibitions against becoming different. How many of us have prohibitions against becoming different from how we were raised to be? Just the area of religion alone is prohibiting us from becoming different, because just as Whitney grew up in the Baptist church and then the Pentecostal experience, and she found it hard to detach from that experience in a way that maybe she could become more spiritual with her gift. Instead, she was rebelling, as one Whitney's, her A&R man, Gary Griffith, says, she was rebelling against the superstardom she was experiencing, driven by unconscious loyalty to her deep roots. And when you grow up in the church, people attach to that church experience most of their life, sometimes for their good. But in her case, I'm not so sure that religious experience was for her good. Because even you and I have had to grow out of the, quote, church experience and into a relationship with our Creator.
That's right. I noticed that when you are introduced to the industry, you know, in quotes, and as she was, and that she was at the top of the industry, you know, she's at the top of the food chain in her heyday. So she had to, she had what is called the collusion effect, where there's a conflict within, internal conflict within the individual, where they're morals that were placed in them early are challenged. You know, sexual purity, you're not supposed to sleep around, and drugs, alcohol, you know, certain things that she was getting into and exposed to that were clearly contrary to the teaching she received as a child. It had to be a serious internal conflict. And if you remember back when Whitney was coming out, she dated quite a bit before she actually got with Bobby Brown. That was not like her first relationship as a star, so-called star. Eddie Murphy was known, you know, she was in his camp at one time, and Magic Johnson was known, even though he was married, he has been rumored, was dealing with her, and a few other popular people of that era. She was not just a little, you know, like a church mouse. She was out there. So the life was coming fast at her. It had to cause some serious psychological scarring to her.
Go ahead.
Hank Copeland. Oh, yeah, one second. When you do that, you have to. That's painful. So how do you deal with that if you don't stop? Right? If you stop, okay, the pain goes away because you're doing what you think is right. Whether it is or not, if you're going with your conscience, you're okay. So if you're going against your conscience, how do you soothe that so people they go further, trying to self-medicate, you know, whether it's a sexual or abusive relationship, drugs, you know, many people get into the drug thing and they go deeper trying to find that peace they're looking for that's eluding them. The money's not doing it. Just to bring Janet up for a second, Janet Jackson, she said, I heard her do an interview in 1998, and she said during the mid-90s when she was just at the top of her game and she had all the money she ever wanted, she was famous. Everyone knew her name. She said, I'm famous all over the world. My records are selling. I'm touring. I'm going everywhere I want to go. I can buy anything I want to buy. And I have succeeded on my own. I'm not my little brother's sister. I'm Janet, Miss Janet. So she said after all of that accomplishment, she went into a deep depression where she was suicidal. She said it was one of the darkest periods she ever went through because in her life, or to that point, because she said that she realized this isn't it. Everything I thought I wanted, I got. But I'm not happy. This is not it. What's the answer? So she said, what people in the world, they look at us and they think, oh, I wish I had what she had, or I wish I had what he had. And that hope keeps us going. You know, we're driving, hoping maybe one day we'll make it, or hit a lotto or something, you know, get an inheritance, something, you know, but that keeps you going. But when you get it and you're not happy, it destroys you inside because you're like, wow, this is not the answer. What is?
And well,
I'm hopeless.
That's what this show is all about, getting back into alignment with your creator. Right. The creator who we call Yahuwah, who has a name, and yet even in Whitney's life, she never called on that name that I'm aware of. And so it was always G-O-D or Jesus. That was her relationship was with names that we, as we know, and we've grown into know the Hebrew names of our creator, Yahuwah, and the son's name, Yahshua. And so it's interesting, the authors write about that relationship that she, or lack of, that she didn't have. And I so identify with this because even the day before her death, she was singing Jesus Loves Me. Now, that's a Sunday school song. And when I heard that, I just couldn't help but think she never really matured in her relationship with her creator. And so the authors write very interestingly about if she had been able to love her creator in a manner that allowed her to take in, to truly digest into her being the deep meaning of the many hundreds of awards she was given, along with her audience's sincere responses to her, that would have inevitably changed the essence of her religious practice and her personal identity. Her very being in the world would have been a spiritual practice. Wouldn't it be wonderful if more of these stars really demonstrate a spiritual practice? So that as they continue, every concert, every recording, every acting performance would have been a worship of her creator. In other words, her understanding of who she was as an expression of the creator would have been at the core of her mature identity. But she could not do it because the creator she praised was not the creator she worshiped. Therein lies the conflict, a big conflict in her life. The creator that she unwittingly worshipped was her unconscious addiction to her roots. The going back to the Jesus Loves Me Sunday school song. That's a perfect example of unconscious loyalty. Because you, as I've grown and as I've developed my own career and helping others as a life coach, it's more about, do you love yourself? Because within you is the kingdom of the Creator. The Creator has put all of us together. Every woman, I'm every woman, because I'm made the same way every other woman is, with the hands and the organs and the brain, the mind-body connection. We're all made the same way. But our experiences in life and then our relationship with the one who knit us together in the womb is really what's going to make the difference. And Whitney would say things like, I don't care what people say I did or what they claim to. I know I'm a child of God. I know he loves me. Jesus loves me. This I know. Even she's been saying those words for many, many years. She was raised in a Baptist church and was also exposed to Pentecost. Yet her blind faith, that you could call that blind faith in the Creator of those churches, never prompted her to grow a strong, mature self, and in my opinion, a strong self-love, that I cannot put these drugs in my body. But that's what you do when you have this addiction to your past, to your roots, and this unconscious allegiance to the things and the emotions and the environment of your childhood. And so that's every one of us. Every one of us may have been struggling with this. You raised in a Baptist church, a Catholic church. You're still performing the same religious rituals, and you're sick and tired on medication, in and out of the hospital. But you have a loyalty to be in church every Sunday, at the altar once more, asking for healing. Unconscious loyalty. When the whole heavens are trying, when your body is full of sickness or ill health, that's the way the Creator communicates. Believe it or not, we have these strands of energy coming from the heavens, from the planets, the stars, that helps us know when we are out of alignment with our loving, compassionate, wise, knowledgeable Creator. And that's what these words mean when we talk about her blind faith in the a deity of the churches. Many of us don't want to really hear this, but if you are sick all the time and you're going to church every Sunday and going to the altar asking for healing, it might have something to do with your unconscious loyalty or allegiance to a system that is out of alignment with the truth of the Creator and the biology within your vessel, your computerized temple. And that's what we want to get out of this book, what really killed Whitney Houston. And so that's just the religious part of it. Then we have the relationships part of it. And one of the things they bring out in the book, and talking about scripture in the Bible, it's clear when at least when one marries, it's time to leave home. It says in Genesis 2:24 that therefore a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And what does that mean? Basically means mommy and daddy are second in priority under the wife, but problems occur in any individual's life when the parent-child relationship and the attachment to family of origin are experienced as the primary relationship, as with Whitney Houston. So how many of us out there are still going back to mommy and daddy every time there's a problem? You listen to mommy and daddy more than you're listening to your wife. You're always going to be my baby. You hear your mother and father always telling you, as they did in Whitney's case, she's always going to be my baby. And neither one of her parents could release Whitney into adulthood and worldwide success. Instead, both of them continue to claim her as my baby and their dependent child. So we have to think about the relationships that are unconsciously allegiance, even though they are not beneficial in your current marriage or your current work situation, any number of dynamics where your allegiance is to your parents more than it is to your current relationship or your husband or wife, and we have a hard time breaking away from that. So it's like Rafa, even especially with men, I don't know about your marriage relationships, but did you see any conflicts in that way where either you or your spouse were attached to relatives, maybe even brothers, sisters, mother, father? It could be a number of those connections.
Yes. Yeah, I did. Excuse me. Yes, I did. Unfortunately. And sometimes the loyalty will be more to the family member than it is to the new spouse. And that's a serious curve in a relationship. If people can get past that, they have a good chance to make it. But usually that can be a deal breaker in a relationship, a serious relationship, let alone a marriage. So, I do know about that. It is something that it comes down to a trust thing, trust issue, where you kind of revert to what's comfortable, as you spoke about Whitney, going back to her early foundational, early church days with her relationship, which did show not too much growth, unfortunately, but spiritually. But as far as just relationship, the person to person, yes, it does reflect a lack of trust in this new relationship or in this new individual. And, well, I know my sister, she's always there for me, or my mom, you know, or my dad. So you go back to what you know, what's comfortable, as opposed to stepping out and trusting your new partner. And that's a level of maturity on both parts, on the individual who's a lack of trust. They have to exercise trust, because if you don't exercise that muscle, it's not going to get strong or grow. And it takes patience on the other party, from the other party. You know, they have to not blow up and react negatively to that, because it does hurt when you know someone doesn't believe in you, or they're not really. When the chips are down, they don't stand by you. That's a painful thing to go through. So it does come down to trust and maturity. So you touched on both of those areas very well with, as far as Whitney is concerned. I would just about Whitney. Well, I did remember she went to Damona, if you remember, she did that. Remember that was around 2002 or 4 or something like
you
that?
You mean in Jerusalem?
Yeah, she went to visit Ben Amin.
Israel.
Yes, to the community over there with Ben Amin. And she did get baptized in the Jordan River. And she actually was getting ostracized pretty hard for that, because she was saying, I found out that we are the real Jews. We the real Israelites. Like, she was speaking that truth. And she kind of got blasted pretty hard for that. They kind of silenced her on that. Like, you can't do that. You can't say those things in your position, you know, who you are. People listen to you. Don't do that. So it kind of shut that down. But she did come back to the state talking kind of strong for a while. She was wearing, you know, the righteous garments and had her head wrapped for, you know, a few weeks. And somehow, you know, I guess she, you don't want to fight the hand that feeds you, you know, so to speak. So she capitulated and stopped saying those things and started that wearing her own clothes. And, but she did, she said, I'm delivered from my drug addiction. I'm born again Israelite. And she was very strong and vocal about it. Her and Bobby went there. I have a picture of it, matter of fact.
I remember that period because I had friends who went over there, and so they were sending pictures and so forth. But then again, she came back, and who was waiting for her? Her leeching family members. She had so many family members a part of her business that she could never really disconnect from her roots, because they were running, many of them running managers and, you know, bodyguards, and then her brother who was the one, I think, who introduced her to some of the drugs, he was always there. And so in order for her to proceed with that cleansing she had in Israel, she would have had to come back and detach from a lot of the people who she was had allegiance and loyalty to. And she was not able to do it, namely her mother, who in many ways her mother was trying to help her. But her attitude about many things, especially after her drug addiction, was not that one of a serious attitude that she wanted to really overcome. But in many ways, it was kind of a joke to her, as they write in this book. So it's just it is a very complicated situation that we look at, but the main point here is that we all have. We're not even pointing fingers. We don't want to point fingers. We just want to reveal the deeper layer driving the superstar of a woman who had a voice like no other, and who fell so, in many ways, so quickly, but she fell to a place of hatred, almost, of self, for many, many different reasons. Her family and supporters, they love to blame Bobby Brown, for instance.
Yeah.
But that was really not even the issue. Because it was, as we've learned since then, that it was Whitney who actually introduced Bobby to the drugs. And there are so many times that Whitney decided on her own that this was the relationship she wanted to stay in. And so we can't really blame anyone, Bobby Brown, but we're looking at what the attachments were to her roots. That is where we see the life-threatening, career-destroying drug problem that she had as evidence of her denial of the seriousness of it. She laughs at things. For instance, when she was interviewed by Oprah, she said something like, if you move, Bobby, we're going to take you down. Don't you make one move. He just stood there. He was scared. And Sissy said, let's go. I'm not going to lose you to the world. I'm not going to lose you to Satan. I want my daughter back. I want you back. I want to see the glow in her eyes. So we have this dynamics of mother and husband, again, this disconnect where the mother is trying to rescue her daughter. And yet Whitney laughed on that show at the memory of her mother showing up with the sheriffs evidence again of kind of her denial about how serious the whole thing was. But it just goes on to say how she related to her mother, husband, and all these family members in a way that she could not rise into the gift of the voice and become more spiritual about this gift. What a gift. How many of us would love to have that gift? And yet many of us, even if we had the gift, we wouldn't want the stardom, because looking at her and what that could do is that it could bring any of us down.
That's right.
And unfortunately, it seems there were no professional people around who understood the power of this unconscious loyalty that could have helped her understand this grip of the programming, the unconscious programming that put her into a place of self-hatred once her super success began to come. And they write in here, along with any of the superstars who come from backgrounds that do not support their newfound power, popularity, and prosperity, Whitney needed serious help so she could grow into a true adult that could carry her success as well as maintain respect and care for her roots. Now, isn't that a nice balance? If you can carry your success with your voice, that beautiful voice, and then maintain respect and care of the roots.
Yeah, that's hard.
It is. It's a challenge.
Yeah, that is and you know, one of the elements that doesn't get enough attention is the industry itself doesn't really, like I was talking with a guy yesterday, a client of mine, and we were talking about an individual that he met. I don't know if you know his name, guy. He was a rapper, Biz Markie, and he said he met Biz Markie last year, I think, or this year, and he said he looked really, really bad in his face. Like, he just didn't look healthy. He looked really bad, and he's only about 50 now. But he said he just looked really sickly. He was big, he's bloated and whatnot, and that's probably due to some of the medication he's on, but he just doesn't look healthy. And I said, and he spoke of how, like, where is the makeup people or the his manager or his TV producers or whatever. He has this show he was doing, a children's show on Nickelodeon, and the Disney Channel wanted him. He said, how could they let him just look like that? They see he's not well. And I said, well, they don't care. The industry doesn't really care how, if you're not taking care of yourself, that's not their concern. And if you're not well or at whole in yourself, at peace with yourself, they don't care. Long as you're able to function and do that job and keep that money coming in, that's all that matters. And you don't stir up a hornet nest, you're not making trouble, you're not getting in trouble, and you're able to work, that's fine. And whatever else is insignificant to them. So back to Whitney, with her issues and demons and battles she was dealing with, no one, you know, they don't care. If you don't take that responsibility for yourself, they're not. They just, you're a cash cow. Look at Mike Tyson. Clearly, he needed a hug and some medication and some therapy, and they didn't care. It was just, when's the next fight? Who's the next guy? Who's the next bum he's going to beat up? And let's make this next $30 million. Let's give him this $30 million, and we'll make this next $300-400 million. and keep it going until, you know, he falls apart and we'll get somebody else. So that's the element that goes kind of like the people get the blame, and we should, because we have a responsibility to our own body. The Creator put us here on this planet, and we have responsibility to take care of this body. You know, it's the only one we get. We can't trade it in or upgrade. You know, we can't do anything except live in this body and be the best that we can be in this body. So that is the self, takes self-awareness in his responsibility.
Yes, indeed. And I was reading at the end of the book, and I highly recommend it if you want the full story of what really killed Whitney Houston. We're only giving you a few highlights of the book. It's by Judith Shervin, S-H-E-R-V-E-N, and Jim Snakowski. I'm sure if you just Google what really killed Whitney Houston, you'll find the book on Amazon. But at the end of her life, and we're going to go into, I'm going to play a song to kind of break this up. And then we're going to give you some signs and signals of your own unconscious loyalties, because we don't just want to end on the tragic death of Whitney Houston and her life and all that meant. But we want to help you, as these authors have done in several supplements to their book, to recognize your own unconscious loyalties, the signs and signals. But at the end of her life, which to me illustrates so vividly her lack of self-love and her lack of relationship with the Creator instead of her religious attachment. But the toxicology report from the coroner determined that her cause of death was drowning and effects of arteriosclerotic heart disease and cocaine use. And she had all these things in her system at the time of her death: alcohol, marijuana, Xanax, Flexeril, whatever that is, and Benadryl. And at 48 years old, she was actually all alone most of her professional life. And so, as they say in the book, we don't want to mourn Whitney Houston for the loss of her incredible personal genius. But we do mourn her, and we mourn the tragedy of a life lived without understanding the power of unconscious programming, especially the powerful allegiance she had to her roots and the coexisting forbiddance we call the fear of being fabulous, which took her down and led her to her life. And it's just a reminder for us that this messenger called Whitney Houston had a powerful lesson to teach us all. And that's why we should take heed to her story and just remember that these allegiances or loyalties exist. And we're going to give you in just a few minutes some of the signs and signals that you are being loyal to something that's not going to keep you in health or help you profit in the way that your goals and your desires are telling you. So let's just listen to one of her best songs, The Greatest Love of All.
My knees, a lonely place to
And of course, we all know that that song, unfortunately, did not really apply to Whitney Houston because of her loyalties and her allegiance. She was unable to develop that love for herself, because that's one of the important keys to getting healthy and healing, is to begin to love what the Creator has put inside of us. It's a kingdom. It really is a kingdom inside of us when you start to study and read that all these organs and tissue and parts in your body are connected to your mind, which is part of the whole cycle. And then there's this harmony occurring in the body that speaks to us when we have pain. And then there's the whole universe outside of this body that is connected to us. We are a microcosm of the universe. And one woman who was a star and who has, in my mind, become a messenger of many lessons, didn't learn all that. So we want to help. That's what this show is about. Soul Purpose Healing is about getting back to the alignment of your Creator, beginning to align yourself with the love, the compassion, and the wisdom of your Creator. And it's for the most part found in His Word. There's the Psalms and the Proverbs. If you don't read any other part of the Bible, those Psalms and the Proverbs will give you much wisdom and understanding about how your Creator operates and how His nature operates. And I wonder sometimes how much your Bible reading did Whitney actually do, other than to see that Jesus loved her, which didn't have much power in her life at all, but was a clear sign of her unconscious loyalty to a, quote, religion and not a relationship. So we want to, at this point, give you some signs and signals of your unconscious loyalties. This is a supplement to the book that the authors sent to me when I emailed them. And it's very interesting. As I read some of these, think about whether this fits you or not. And, of course, Rafa, just chime in if you can if you can relate. But it says, how many times have you said to yourself, number one, why can't I get ahead the way my friends are? Or how come my marriage feels so stale and boring when it started out so great? Or I go on a diet and lose some weight and then pounds just jump back on. It's so frustrating. Or money seems to fall through my fingers. No matter how much I make, it's not in my bank. Or it doesn't matter how much I succeed, I'm still afraid I'm not good enough. Or when I look back on my life, it looks like a long line of failed opportunities and I don't know why. Or I'm filled with so much anxiety when I go after things I really want. I don't get it. And I've tried so many personal growth workshops, read so many self-help books, and tried all kinds of exercises, but none of them have helped me get out of the rut that keeps me depressed. And then finally, in their list of how many times you've said to yourself, I start out strong whenever I go after something, but then the excitement and energy just fade away. I don't get it. So these are just a few of the examples of many ways unconscious loyalties, or what they call unconscious holdbacks, can stop you from reaching and fulfilling your greatest desires. And they're not only caused by deeply hidden unconscious loyalties, but the kinds of statements above are widely common signs of the resulting emotional distress and chronic frustration men and women of every age experience every day across almost every country and culture. And, you know, it just brings to mind the relationships that I see, the frustration in relationships. I read an article once that how African-American women are frustrated because they don't find very many African-American men, that they're either married to women of a different race or they're in a city where there's so many women and not enough men. And it's like there's your loyalty to a race. And so we, especially in the community of African-Americans, we think, well, many of us or many are tied to the idea or loyalty that you can't marry or have a relationship outside of your race. And I'm not even, that's kind of on the border of conscious and unconscious. It may be even a thin line in whether you're consciously waiting for someone of the same race or you're unconsciously loyal to a mate that is of your background and your culture and your heritage. Rafa, do you relate to any of these lists on here or these common signs?
Too many. And I would have cut you off almost every time. So, yeah, I just said, let me wait till you finish. Unfortunately, yes. That's a long list. But there are quite a few I can relate to, at least at one point in time in my life. Some I could thankfully say have fallen by the wayside, you know, but then there's still, you have struggles that because we're all growing and learning how to become better individuals and stronger. So... definitely. There are quite a few could relate to, like, the relationship element, the success level, things that you may have dreamed about or aspired and weren't able to translate them into the physical reality. Quite a few. So... we all have some unconscious loyalties, whether some are conscious loyalties. I think we spoke about that yesterday,
mm-hmm.
that sometimes we get ourselves, like we will obligate ourselves to certain people or certain things that we feel we need to do whatever it is we're trying to do or get whatever it is we're trying to get or attain. And we obligate ourselves to a fault sometimes. And usually they're not healthy, those type of obligations. I heard a pastor say one day, anything that's healthy for you is not addictive. That's something to think about because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I never met anyone that was, like, addicted to water, like going through withdrawal. If they, you know, we all need water, but there's not. It's never been a, like, an obsession or broccoli, you know, something. Like, oh, I'm going to have a fit if I don't have some broccoli. We don't do that, but things that are not healthy, we develop unhealthy attachments and addictions to them, and they can become conscious loyalties, sometimes
mm-hmm.
unconscious, but mainly conscious loyalties, and at the end of the day, they're all to our detriment.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes back to our core, our heart, you know, that we always speak on is the thing that should be the most important to us is our relationship to our Creator. This is what will help us overcome those failures, those unconscious loyalties, the conscious obligations that we put ourselves out in bad situations or bad relationships or addictions to, you know, things. Sometimes we're addicted to people and not even aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things can be detrimental to our success, and more importantly, our peace. That we're not happy, and the Creator is telling us, why are you like in, you know, in Isaiah 55, 55:3, why do you spend your money, your time, your energy for that which does not satisfy? You know, incline your ear to me. This is what he's saying, Isaiah 55:3. So, and we read in Luke, I had turned to it while you had the song on, in Luke 12, verse 15, the Messiah says, take heed and beware of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things that you possess. So we're chasing after things, and they don't, like I was saying with Janet, that they don't, that's not it. They don't satisfy. It doesn't bring what we all need, that love, that sense of self-worth and peace. All of that comes from a proper relationship with your source, your true source, which is our Heavenly Father, Yahweh. So we need to, like, I guess, reprioritize or get our priorities straight and in this life. And it starts right there with that relationship, getting that in line. Everything else begins to fall into place slowly, but it does.
Well, you mentioned health too, that you, when you said health, talking about health, even the unconscious loyalty we have to the solution to poor health is one that can cause people to fail in their life, or at least to stumble. I don't know. They talk about in the book how there's really no such thing as failure, but you have so many people who are unconsciously loyal to a man or woman in a white jacket for their health. Their allegiance, when the body is out of balance, when the body is out of alignment with the Creator. And let me just say, I'm not a medical doctor. I don't have an MD after my name, and I'm not trying to replace any professional information you may be receiving from a man or woman in the white coat. But we have this unconscious or maybe conscious loyalty. But I want to say unconscious because as a child, most of us are taught if you're sick, you have to go to the doctor. If you're sick, when I was growing up, we had a doctor that came to our house. My dad had a friend who was a doctor, and he came in with the black bag, and if we had a cold or anything, he would come and bring the cough syrup. And so you grow up thinking this is the way things should be. Is if I'm sick, I don't have to be more disciplined. I just go to my doctor. And so many of us are struggling with that loyalty or allegiance to the medical system because that's what we were trained in. That's what we grew up in. And so you have hundreds, if not thousands of senior citizens on 20 or 30 medications who never broke that allegiance, who never learned how to be more disciplined and take better care of themselves and to spend less time in the doctor's office and more time juicing carrots or greens or eating better or just being more disciplined in their relationships and their responses and reading, just reading in that sense, that there are so many health books out there that help a person take charge or at least become more disciplined. But there's an area that is affecting our whole population. You look at the scare, the fear-mongering that's going on right now in the world even, or the country, and people have an allegiance, many people, that the only thing that's going to save them is a vaccine. So here you have many people getting ready to fall off a cliff, in my opinion. If you think that's the answer to a virus, they're uneducated, they're ignorant, and their allegiance is to what? A government that might be a little deceptive. Their allegiance is to scientists who, just because they're showing their white coats and they have a degree, some degrees after their name, they have an allegiance to trust those people to, quote, save them even, or to help them in some way. So this goes to so many different areas, but as the authors point out, there's no such thing as failure, that we experience failure all the time. So even if you have an allegiance to something or someone that's somewhat destructive in your life and it's not helping you succeed, there's a doorway that will take you beyond being stuck and into an experience of fulfilling your dreams and desires, and there is hope for all of us if we are ready to renew our minds. When you were a tiny person, you were loved, and what was all around you, with the ability to evaluate what you were experiencing. But in that reality, everything is not always true. Would you agree?
Yeah.
We grow up and we realize actually what's lovable, valuable, good for you or not. And so what happens in that early love grip that we're in is that we are create loyalties that later show up as bad choices, procrastination, poor self-esteem. All those things are pointing. They're trying to tell you that you need to renew your mind. You need to renew your path of life, the choices that you're making. So the authors remind us that the unconscious or the out-of-awareness world of assumptions and beliefs, self-perceptions, is going to have the upper hand over even your conscious dimension of your mind every time, so long as you have not done the inner work of excavation that will allow you to discover it, for one, and release it. And that's why we're doing this show. We want you to have a sense of an awareness that what things are keeping you stuck. Why are you stuck? Consider that you have these allegiances and you're not renewing your mind. You're not reading enough. You're just following the crowd. Because just as Whitney Houston was born into a specific family atmosphere, and you give your heart to them when you were young, and to even know that you were doing it, that's what they call in the book the love grip. And only now, today, the early love grip has attached a big holdback. It's a big unconscious loyalty and onto your ability to have the life that you consciously want to have, and you don't even know it. So take a moment, all of you listening, to notice how you're feeling in response to what I've been saying and what we've been sharing. And do you feel hopeful or curious or ready to understand even more? So if you feel hopeful and curious, want to know more, then you're on the path to discovering what you can carry forward from your early beginnings that don't serve you and what you need to drop. And if you're feeling curious about what we're talking about here, you're beginning to make a commitment to owning more of your own true, sincere life. Congratulations. You're on the path to getting unstuck. But on the other hand, if you're feeling even more stuck listening and more hopeless, and maybe feeling like what we're talking about is nonsense, then we hope that you'll soften the impact of that type of feeling of defeat by take a moment to accept the suggestion, indeed deeply heartfelt words from us today. And so the concept of the love grip, if it threatens to challenge who you've known yourself to be, then that's a good thing. Because your love grip is what's holding you back, is what the authors are trying to inform us, holding you fast to who you've known yourself to be. And this is meant to expose all that. Yeah, Rafa said, well, unfortunately, some of those things apply to him. It's not maybe so unfortunate, but a wake-up call that we've even come across this knowledge, I think, is the Creator's divine path for us. And even like cancer, we see all the time that cancer is the enemy, but when you, that's another unconscious loyalty to a system that's defining your state of being or your state of your body, that it's an enemy inside of you. When truthfully, if you really are studying and reading and meditating, that cancer is not an enemy at all. It's your body's wake-up call to you. When you're feeling or being diagnosed with something like that, your body is trying to tell you you're on the wrong path, my dear. And it's not any, because the microbes, the trillions and trillions of microbes in you are very intelligent, just like your cells. And so the whole system within the body is working in a very divine, programmed way to help you wake up. And just as this book is meant to do. So we don't have a whole lot of time. I'm going to give you some keys to your freedom as the authors have outlined for us, and then we can kind of sum it up for you and send you on your way to what everyone hopes will be a discovery process of creating new freedom for you, and that you're aware of the elements on the way to a bigger, more successful, healthier life. And number one, you are not alone. Everyone on this planet is suffering holdbacks that are a result of unconscious loyalty. So you're not alone. Keep that in mind. And then number two, a conscious change is a process, not a goal. If you're committed to achieve some freedom from this love grip and this unconscious loyalty, that's your first step, committing to achieve freedom. Not a one-step process. It's not something that occurs and then you're done with it. Changing to be more conscious about who you are, where you come from, and where you want to go is an ongoing process. It's a beautiful journey that we're on, discovering this kingdom within us and how we are learning about our past and how to move forward. And then number three, the authors suggest that progress is never a straight line. That personal freedom is never achieved overnight or in a straight line. You're always encountering that burst of freedom to go forward, and then you have a backslide or even feeling stuck again. And that's simply what they call the digestion and integration time before you launch off into further discovery and establishment of your real self. So we have heard about a beautiful soul with an awesome voice who came to teach us this very powerful lesson. And I'm hoping that you'll share it with all your friends and relatives. And remember this when you have even friends in your own life or relatives who are stuck, that maybe they need to consider the love grips or the unconscious allegiances that they have. So, Rafa, I'm going to give you the voice. Yeah. Go ahead and sing, Rafa.
Yeah, I'll leave that to the real gifted, you know.
Yeah.
I think that you covered so many good points there. And I like the first one especially, that it's not a goal, it's a process, mm-hmm. because sometimes we get discouraged. We're what I call the young people today is like a microwave generation. where, you know, they just want, we want things now, immediate.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's when we don't get quick results, we give up, we get discouraged, and, you know, we turn away. And some things take time. So that is a very good point. Patience is needed. So that stuck out to me more than the others, although all the points were very relevant and true. So I would encourage people to seek there, as the scriptures say, seek your Creator while He may be found.
That's right.
These days, you know, it's time, because we clearly are in perilous times, last days, as the scripture calls. It's all around. You can see people who don't have much conscious awareness at all are seeing that this is a very serious era that we are living in. So, I would recommend people do that and seek, and they will, through that relationship, obtain the things that the celebrities, as well as the everyday working man and woman, are looking for: the happiness, the contentment, the peace, and inner fulfillment, the self-love that we all need, and that love that supersedes human relationship, where our relationships sometimes falter. Our Heavenly Father's relationship and love is very steady and sound. It doesn't waver. It doesn't go through mood swings. You know, it's unconditional, it's there, just for the taking. So, you know, we would be fools not to avail ourselves of such a great gift and honor to be, you know, true sons and daughters of the King, the great King, the true King. That would be my advice and desire for all sincere seekers of truth.
Hallelujah, hallelujah. Thank you. That's so important to be reminded of that. And so we have come up on the end of our show. Hope everyone has been able to hear. I had someone text me saying that our voices were going in and out. And so I hope when the show is archived that we don't have this problem. But we'll just believe that everything will be corrected by Blog Talk Radio. And if you're having trouble listening live, then please check the archives if you missed anything, because we covered so many important things. And, in fact, I will listen to the show after it's stored in the archive and let Blog Talk know that we had the problem, if there is a problem. So we apologize for that if you're having trouble hearing us. But thank you for notifying us, and we hope this show has been a blessing to you, and we're going to go out. Just keep in mind that it is a process, and keep thinking, you're renewing your mind, and following through on the Creator's love, compassion, and forgiveness. So we're going to go out with one of our favorites. I'm sure I'll Always Love You, where her voice is just at its best. And we thank the Creator for giving us Whitney and all the music that she left behind, and especially her lesson. So be blessed and have a great week. Thank you for listening. Shalom.
Shalom.
I should stay. I would only be in your way.
10 seconds.
So I'll go, but I know every step of the way. And all you